This is Audible.
Stop walking on eggshells, taking your life back when someone you care about has borderline personality disorder, by Paul T. Mason, MS, and Randy Krieger. Narrated by Kirsten Potter. Copyright 2010 by Paul T. Mason and Randy Krieger. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with New Harbinger Publications Incorporated and was produced in the year 2011 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright there too. Prologue. More than 40,000 copies. That's how many Stop Walking on Eggshells copies have been purchased since it was published in 1998. At the rate it's selling, the benchmark of 500,000 copies is well within sight. Not only that, this book has been translated into so many languages, I have trouble remembering which they are. When Paul Mason and I were writing this book, we had to struggle to find information of use to family members. A few people were talking about borderline personality disorder, BPD, on AOL and a personality news group. We found just two books for laypeople. Now, the internet is teeming with information, and you'd need an entire bookshelf to hold the mainstream books about BPD, not to mention all the self-published books and e-books by people who have struggled with this disorder from the inside or the outside. So what happened? Many things. Researchers started to have the ability to scan the brain and actually see the differences between the normal brain and the brains of people with BPD. New medications followed, and research continues to reveal data that explain why people with BPD think, feel, and act the way they do. Forward-thinking clinicians developed novel approaches that started showing results. Advocates started their own organizations and began pressuring for more visibility and research dollars. But that's not all. Stop Walking on Eggshells, along with my website and my Welcome to Oz online community, was a potent force in increasing awareness of BPD. Readers went online and started to talk to each other on the internet. People with BPD and their families started websites and formed communities because they had something to say and they didn't feel heard in other arenas. Formerly isolated, people started reaching out to each other. Between 1995 and 2008, my online Welcome to Oz family group grew from 12 members to 16,000. The success of Stop Walking on Eggshells, and later the Stop Walking on Eggshells workbook, also showed publishers that books about BPD could succeed, hence the proliferation of titles. The foreign editions started information flowing in other countries. In 2008, I, Randy Krieger, gave a series of presentations to BPD family members in Tokyo on the invitation of the Japanese publisher of Stop Walking on Eggshells. But not everything is rosy. Most clinicians still lack essential knowledge, especially about how to assess and treat children and adolescents with symptoms of BPD. Another problem is the fundamental lack of understanding that borderline behavior can be expressed in a multitude of ways that don't necessarily get noticed by or detected as signs of BPD by clinicians in the mental health system. On a more personal level, just as the world has moved on, so have my co-author and I. A few years after this book was first published, I wrote the Stop Walking on Eggshells workbook, Practical Strategies for Living with Someone Who Has Borderline Personality Disorder. The workbook format allows for lots of examples and description, and the interactive elements help readers understand themselves and apply the information to their own lives. In 2008, I came out with another major book, The Essential Family Guide to Borderline Personality Disorder. New Tools and Techniques to Stop Walking on Eggshells. It contains a clear-cut system with 5 skill sets to help family members move beyond blame and use concrete solutions to feel better, get unstuck, be heard, and set limits with confidence. As you'll see, I've sprinkled some items from the book in this new edition. Both books complement each other and offer different perspectives. Family members need all the help they can get. Paul Mason, my co-author, took a different path. He is now the Vice President of Clinical Services at Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare All Saints in Racine, Wisconsin. In his role, Paul has executive and administrative oversight of the Mental Health and Addiction Care Service Line, which includes 3 inpatient programs and 6 outpatient clinics serving the needs of adults, children, and families in southeast Wisconsin. His three children, who were just entering grade school when this book first appeared in bookstores, are now ages 13, 17, and 18. He continues to be happily married to Monica, who, when not taking care of all the family needs, maintains a small therapy practice serving adults and couples in Racine. We hope you'll enjoy this new edition. Introduction. Intimate Strangers: How This Book Came to Be. I must be defective. That was the only explanation I could think of for his behavior. Why did he act so loving one moment and then rip me to shreds the next? Why did he tell me I was talented and wonderful and then scream at me that I was contemptible and the cause of all his problems? If he loved me as much as he said he did, why did I feel so manipulated and powerless? And how could someone so intelligent and educated sometimes act so completely irrational? On a conscious level, I knew I hadn't done anything to deserve this treatment. But over several years, I came to accept his view of reality, that I was flawed and everything really was my fault. Even after the relationship ended, my feelings of distrust and low self-esteem remained, so I began seeing a therapist. After several months, she revealed something to me about my former friend that would radically change my life and those of many others. The behavior you describe is very characteristic of someone with borderline personality disorder, she said. I can't make a diagnosis since I've never met him, but from what you've said, he certainly seems to fit the criteria. Borderline personality disorder? I had never heard of it. She recommended that I read I Hate You, Don't Leave Me by Gerald Kreisman, M.D., 1989. I did, and discovered that my friend's confusing behavior matched 7 out of the 9 traits for borderline personality disorder, BPD, listed in the clinician's Bible, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Just 5 traits are needed for a diagnosis. I wanted to learn more about how the disorder had affected me. I needed to know how to heal. But I could find just 2 books about BPD for consumers, and they were more like popular explanations of BPD than practical self-help books for family members. So I decided to write my own self-help book. Because BPD affects 6 million people in North America, I figured that at least 18 million family members, partners, and friends, like me, were blaming themselves for behavior that had little to do with them. A friend, who knew I wanted to write the book with a credentialed mental health professional, suggested that I contact a colleague of hers, Paul Mason. A psychotherapist, Paul had worked with borderlines and their families in inpatient and outpatient settings for 10 years. A respected journal had published his research on the subtypes of BPD. He had also given several professional and community presentations on the subject. Like me, Paul strongly believed that friends, partners, and family members of those with BPD desperately needed to know they were not alone. Family members tell me that they're in an emotional combat zone and they just don't know how to react anymore, he said. Paul began researching the book, searching the professional literature for relevant studies. Many articles discussed the difficulties of treating borderline clients, whom some practitioners view as being needy, challenging, and slow to improve, if they get better at all. But although the articles outlined coping techniques for trained professionals who see borderline patients 1 hour a week, most glossed over the needs of the untrained family members who interact with the person 7 days a week. In the studies that did discuss the family, the term almost always referred to the family of origin of the person with BPD. The focus was to determine the role the early family environment played in the development of the disorder. In other words, the studies looked at behavior directed toward the person with BPD rather than the behavior of that person toward others. While Paul buried himself in professional journals, I began interviewing dozens of mental health professionals about what the non-borderline, or non-BP, the partner, friend, or family member of a person with BPD or BPD traits, can do to take control of their own lives and stop walking on eggshells while remaining supportive of the person they care about. Some of these clinicians were well-known BPD researchers. Others were local professionals recommended by friends. I was in for a surprise. Although BPD, by definition, negatively affects those in relationships with borderlines, BPs, most mental health professionals I spoke with a few notable exceptions, were so overwhelmed by the needs of their borderline patients that their advice for non-BPs was quite limited. But as I continued interviewing, the body of knowledge grew. Paul and I had uncovered essential information for people who care about someone with BPD, but we didn't have a book yet, not the detailed, supportive guide we wanted to write. Enter the Internet. My new computer, which I had purchased for my public relations, marketing, and writing business, came with a disc for America Online, AOL. Curious to see the Internet firsthand, I installed the program. I discovered an entire world that I didn't know existed. Internet news groups and message boards on AOL are like the colossal recovery support groups in the biggest church basement in the world. The netizens I met there, both BPs and non-BPs, weren't waiting for professionals to come up with the answers. They were sharing coping strategies, exchanging technical information, and offering emotional support to intimate strangers who understood exactly what they were going through. I started by reading the years of accumulated postings of hundreds of BPs and non-BPs on America Online. I sent email messages to the recent posters, asking them to participate in our research. Most did, delighted that someone was finally addressing the need for more information about BPD. As we conversed back and forth via email, I began identifying the primary concerns of family members, partners, and friends. Then I asked people with BPD for their perspectives. For example, when the non-BPs spoke of their helplessness in the face of borderline rage, I asked the BPs to articulate what they were thinking and feeling during a rampage and how others could best respond. Initially, the people with BPD distrusted me. But over the months, as their confidence in me grew, they revealed their deepest feelings about themselves and described the incredible devastation wrought by the disorder. Many told me horrific stories of sexual abuse, self-mutilation, depression, and suicide attempts. "Being a borderline feels like eternal hell, nothing less," wrote one woman. "Pain, anger, confusion, hurt, never knowing how I am going to feel from one minute to the next. Sadness because I damage those I love. Once in a great while I'll get too happy and then feel anxious because of that. Then I cut myself. Then I feel ashamed that I cut myself. I feel like my life is an endless Hotel California, and the only way to leave is to check out permanently." Some of the therapists didn't have much hope that people could actually recover from BPD. But on AOL and the Internet, I met many people who had greatly improved through a combination of therapy, medication, and emotional support. Their joy in feeling normal for the first time in their lives sometimes brought me to tears. And, for the first time, I understood how my own BP must have suffered. Behavior that had seemed incomprehensible to me now made sense. For the first time, I understood on a gut level that those years of unprovoked emotional assaults weren't really about me. They probably resulted from his own sense of shame and his intense fears of being abandoned. The discovery that he was a victim, too, turned some of my anger into compassion. The stories from the family members on the Internet were just as horrifying. Partners told me about spouses who told damaging and embarrassing lies about them, or even filed false charges of abuse. Loving, bewildered parents of children diagnosed with BPD traits spent their entire life savings trying to help their children, only to be implicitly or explicitly accused of child abuse. Adult children of BPs talked about their nightmarish childhoods. One man said, "Even my body functions were criticized. My borderline mother claimed that I didn't eat, walk, talk, think, sit, run, urinate, cry, sneeze, cough, laugh, bleed, or hear correctly." Siblings of borderline spoke of having to fight for their parents' attention and worrying that their own children might develop the disorder. With the assistance of volunteers I met on the message boards, I established a website about BPD, www.bpdcentral.com, and organized an online community for non-BPs called Welcome to Oz. Most were flabbergasted to discover that so many other people shared an experience they thought was unique. For example, three members of Welcome to Oz reported that major arguments had taken place at airports. Four members said that the borderline in their life had been furious at them for days because of something they did in the BP's dreams. Paul and I began to organize this mass of information very slowly. We developed a system. I would come up with ideas and suggestions based on internet discussions and give them to Paul, who would revise them, expand on them, and put them into a theoretical framework. Other times, Paul would develop recommendations based on his research that I would fine-tune and distribute to Welcome to Oz members for their real-world observations. We both marveled at the technology. With just a stroke of a key, the internet made it possible to obtain feedback from hundreds of people across the globe. When we were both satisfied with our work, we shared it with Paul's colleagues, other mental health professionals, and well-known BPD researchers who had spent years working with borderline patients and their families. They confirmed that their patients and family members had the same kinds of concerns as our internet correspondents. To further ensure the accuracy of our data, we asked Edith Cracciolo, M.A., a professor of psychology at Cerritos College in Norwalk, California, to conduct a survey of the non-BPs in our internet support group. Of course, we weren't able to satisfy everyone. When I first considered writing the book, I couldn't figure out why it had never been done before. Several months into the project, the reasons became quite clear. Borderline personality disorder is a controversial, complex topic. Just defining it is like trying to catch a fish in your bare hands, blindfolded and in the rain. Theories on what causes BPD are plentiful but inconclusive. Treatment is hotly disputed by reputable researchers. Most frustrating of all was the lack of recognition of BPD by the mental health community and, consequently, the general public. According to the American Psychiatric Association, APA, the incidence of BPD is nearly that of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder combined. Yet most professionals we interviewed acknowledged that their training did not adequately prepare them to diagnose and treat this challenging disorder. Some had heard only one or two lectures on the subject. Writing this book proved to be as emotionally difficult as it was intellectually challenging. Many people with BPD included veiled or explicit suicide threats in their responses to my questions. Each day, I received at least one desperate letter from someone who had just discovered the existence of BPD from www.bpdcentral.com and wanted guidance about what to do next. The result of our 3 years of effort is this book. It is not the last word on the subject. It is only the beginning. We hope that it sparks interest in new research, helps clinicians educate their clients, provides support and comfort to family and friends, and offers hope that people with BPD can get better. Most of all, we hope it will help you, and countless others like you, to get off the emotional roller coaster you've been riding since someone with BPD came into your life. Randy Krieger. Part 1. Understanding BPD Behavior. Chapter 1. Walking on Eggshells. Does someone you care about have BPD? After 15 years of marriage, I still couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. I researched in libraries, talked to doctors, spoke to counselors, read articles, and chatted with friends. I spent 15 years wondering, worrying, and believing too much of what she was telling me about myself. I doubted myself and hurt so much without knowing why. Then one day I finally found the answers on the internet. I started crying with relief. Although I can't get my borderline significant other to admit she needs help, at least I finally understand what's going on. It's not my fault. Now I know the truth. From the Welcome to Oz online community, www.bpdcentral.com. Is this book for you? Is someone you care about causing you a great deal of pain? Do you find yourself concealing what you think or feel because you're afraid of the other person's reaction, or because it just doesn't seem worth the horrible fight or hurt feelings that will follow? Do you feel that anything you say or do will be twisted and used against you? Are you blamed and criticized for everything wrong in the relationship, even when it makes no logical sense? Are you the focus of intense, violent, or irrational rages, alternating with perfectly normal and loving behavior? Does no one believe you when you explain that this is going on? Do you feel like the person you care about sees you as either all good or all bad, with nothing in between? Is there sometimes no rational reason for the switch? Are you afraid to ask for things in the relationship because you will be told that you're too demanding or that there is something wrong with you? Do you feel that your needs are not important? Does the other person denigrate or deny your point of view? Do you feel that their expectations are constantly changing, so you can never do anything right? Are you accused of doing things you never did and saying things you never said? Do you feel misunderstood and, when you try to explain, do you find that the other person doesn't believe you? Are you often put down? If you try to leave the relationship, does the other person try to prevent you, using anything from declarations of love and promises to change to implicit or explicit threats? Do you make excuses for their behavior or try to convince yourself that everything is okay? If you answered yes to many of these questions, we have good news for you. You're not going crazy. It's not your fault, and you're not alone. You may share these experiences because someone close to you has traits associated with borderline personality disorder, BPD. Following are three true stories of people who discovered that someone they care about had the disorder. As with all examples in this book, the stories are based on those shared in internet support groups, though we have changed many details to conceal the author's identities. John's story, married to BPD. Being married to someone with BPD is heaven one minute, hell the next. My wife's moods change by the second. I'm walking on eggshells trying to please her and avoid a fight for speaking too soon, too quickly, in the wrong tone, or with the wrong facial motions. Even when I do exactly as she asks, she gets mad at me. One day she ordered me to take the kids somewhere because she wanted time alone. But as we were leaving, she threw the keys at my head and accused me of hating her so much I couldn't stand to be in the house with her. When the kids and I got back from the movie, she acted like nothing had happened. She wondered why I was still upset and told me that I have problems letting go of my anger. It wasn't always like this. Before we got married, we had a whirlwind fantasy courtship. She idolized me, said I was perfect for her in so many ways. The sex was incredible. I wrote her love poems and bought her expensive gifts. We got engaged after 4 months, and a year later we were married and on a $10,000 dream honeymoon. But right after the wedding, she began taking meaningless little things and turning them into mountains of criticism, interrogation, and pain. She accused me of wanting other women constantly and would point out imaginary examples to substantiate her claims. She became threatened by my friends and began cutting them down. She said bad things about my business, my past, my values, my pride, anything connected to me. Still, every once in a while, the old her comes back, the one who loved me and thought I was the greatest guy in the universe. She's still the smartest, funniest, and sexiest woman I know, and I'm still very much in love. The marriage counselor thinks that my wife might have BPD, but my wife insists I'm the one who is screwing up our relationship. She thinks that the counselor is a quack, and she won't go back. How can I make her get the help she desperately needs? Larry's story, parenting a child with BPD. We knew something was wrong with our adopted son, Richard, when he was 18 months old. He was cranky, cried a lot, and would scream for 3 hours straight. At age 2, he began having several tantrums a day, some lasting for hours. Our doctor simply said, "Boys will be boys." When Rich was 7, we found a note in his room saying he was going to kill himself when he turned 8. His elementary school teacher referred us to a local psychiatrist who told us he needed more structure and consistency. We tried positive reinforcement, tough love, and even diet modification, but nothing worked. By the time Rich was in junior high school, he was lying, stealing, skipping school, and raging out of control. The police became involved when he attempted suicide, started cutting himself, and threatened to kill us. He would dial the child abuse hotline each time we disciplined him by sending him to his room. Our son manipulated his teachers, his family, and even the police. He could be very sharp and charm people with his wit, good looks, and sense of humor. Every counselor was convinced that his behavior was our fault. By the time they saw through his deception, he would refuse to go back, and each new therapist never took the time to read through his chart, which by now was several inches thick. Finally, after threatening a teacher at school, he wound up in a short-term treatment center. At various times, we were told he had attention deficit disorder or suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder from some unknown trauma. One psychiatrist said he was suffering from depression with psychotic disorder. Lots of people told us he was just a bad kid. After 4 hospitalizations, our insurance company told us they would no longer pay. The hospital said he was too sick to come home, and the local psychiatrists were advising us to go to court and have ourselves declared unfit parents. Somehow we found a state-subsidized inpatient hospital where he received his first BPD diagnosis. They put him on various meds, but said that there was little hope of him getting better. Rich did manage to graduate from high school and start college, which ultimately was a disaster. His maturity level now is about age 18, although he's 23. Reaching adulthood has helped some, but he still fears abandonment, can't sustain a long-term relationship, and has quit 4 jobs in 2 years. His friends come and go because he can be so overbearing, obnoxious, manipulative, and opinionated. So he depends on us for money and emotional support. We're all he has left. Ken's story, living with a parent with BPD. My mother's love for me was conditional. When I didn't do what I was supposed to, chores or whatever, she would rage, cut me down, and say I was a horrible kid who would never have any friends. But when she needed love, she would become affectionate, hug me, and talk about how close we were. There was never any way to predict which mood she would be in. My mother got resentful if she felt someone else was taking up too much of my time and energy. She was even jealous of our dog, Snoopy. I always thought I had done something wrong, or that there was something wrong with me. She took it upon herself to improve me by constantly telling me how I needed to change. She saw something wrong with my hair, my friends, my table manners, and my attitude. She seemed to exaggerate and lie to justify her assertions. When my father protested, she dismissed him with a wave of her hand. She always had to be right. Over the years, I tried to meet her expectations, but whenever I did, they changed. Despite years of stinging criticism, I never became accustomed to it. Today, I have trouble getting close to people. I can't trust anyone completely, not even my wife. When I feel especially close to her, I brace myself for the inevitable rejection I know will come. If she doesn't do something I can label rejecting, I rebuff her in some way, like getting mad at her for something stupid. Intellectually, I know what's happening, but I feel powerless to stop it. The intensity of BPD behavior. People with BPD feel the same emotions other people do. They do many of the same things that other people do. The difference is that they feel things more intensely, act in ways that seem more extreme, have difficulty regulating their emotions and behavior. BPD does not cause fundamentally different behavior, but behavior that is very far to one side of the continuum. Researchers coined the term borderline in the first half of the 20th century, when they thought people who exhibited behaviors we now associate with BPD were on the border between neurosis and psychosis. Although this concept was discarded in the 1970s, the name stuck. If you learn, it's BPD. People who care about someone with borderline personality disorder are usually flabbergasted when they learn that BPD may be at the root of this person's erratic, hurtful, and confusing behavior. They often wonder why they haven't heard of BPD before, especially if they've sought help from the mental health system. Why don't we hear much about BPD? Unfortunately, BPD is not always recognized, even by mental health professionals. Several factors may explain why. 1. The American Psychiatric Association didn't formally recognize BPD in its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM 1994, a standard reference for the diagnosis and treatment of psychiatric illnesses, until 1980. Many mental health professionals miss signs of BPD in their patients simply because they're not educated enough about the disorder. 2. Some clinicians disagree with the information in the DSM. A few do not believe that BPD exists. Some professionals dismiss the diagnosis as a catch-all designation or a wastebasket diagnosis to describe difficult patients. This is becoming less common as the research has mounted over the years. BPD is the most researched of all personality disorders. 3. Some clinicians believe that BPD is so stigmatizing that they will not label patients with the diagnosis for fear they will become outcasts within the mental health system. Many clinicians make a formal diagnosis of BPD on patients' charts, but choose not to discuss it with the patient. Or they mention it briefly, but do not explain it. To tell or not to tell. As you listen to this book, you may be eager to talk about BPD with the person you think has it. This is understandable. Learning about the disorder can be a powerful, transformational experience. The fantasy goes like this. The person will be grateful to you and will rush into therapy to conquer their demons. Unfortunately, the reality differs. Family members repeatedly told us that their loved one instead responded with rage, denial, and a torrent of criticism. Frequently, the person with BPD traits accused the family member of being the one with the disorder. Other scenarios are possible, too. The person with BPD traits may feel such shame and despair that they attempt to hurt themselves. Or they may use the information to deny responsibility for their behavior. I can't help it. I'm borderline. No celebrity has ever admitted to having the disorder, although tabloids and biographies speculate widely, but many show the traits. Issues like eating disorders, domestic violence, AIDS, and cancer often do not move to the forefront of our national consciousness until they affect someone famous. Seek help from a qualified therapist. The issues here are complex. Don't rush into anything. Discuss your thoughts with a qualified therapist who is experienced in treating people with BPD. Generally, it's preferable that the person learn about BPD from a therapist, not from you. If the person is an adult and is currently seeing a therapist, the therapist probably will not discuss BPD with you because of confidentiality laws. You can, however, share your concerns with the counselor. It's likely that other people in the person's life may also respond with denial and accusations, especially the borderline's family of origin, his or her mother, father, and siblings. Keep in mind that it is not your job to convince anyone of anything. People have to be ready and willing to learn. The exception. There are some situations when you might carefully discuss BPD with someone you think has the disorder. If they are actively looking for answers as to why they feel the way they do, if the two of you are not playing the blame game, if you can do so in a caring, loving way and assure the person that you plan on sticking with them through years of treatment, do not make this promise lightly. Making it and breaking it can be worse than not making the promise at all. When you know and they don't. The eggshells get more fragile when you are aware of a possible BPD diagnosis and the other person is not. Sam, for example, says that because he can't discuss BPD with his possibly borderline wife, Anita, she won't take responsibility for her actions and complains that she's always the victim. Talking about treatment, obviously, is not an option. He also feels like he's being dishonest because he uses a separate mailing address to receive information about BPD. Since finding out about BPD, my interactions have become softer and more compassionate, but certainly just as frustrating. At times, it feels like the tremendous volume of information I have gained has been killing me. Wesley. Only you, in consultation with a trained mental health professional with experience treating BPD, can decide how to proceed. We offer suggestions for choosing a therapist in Appendix A. Don't get stuck on the diagnosis. Rather than dwell on the diagnosis per se, help the person see that in any relationship, both people bear responsibility for the way things are. You may feel that the BP is responsible for all the problems, but set this aside for now. Your message should be that when there are problems in relationships, both people need to work on them together. If the person with BPD cannot seem to take a cooperative approach to working on the relationship, you may wish to simply focus on setting limits. Chapter 6. As we'll discuss, asking the person to observe your limits doesn't depend on their awareness of or willingness to admit having the disorder. Remember, the other person may or may not have BPD, and even if they do, that may not completely explain their behavior. Switch the focus from wondering about the possible causes of their actions to solving problems that result from those actions and behaviors. How to use this book. This book is packed with information. Don't try to absorb it all at once. It is meant to be digested in small bites. Go step by step. We suggest you listen to this book in order rather than skipping around. The knowledge you gain in each chapter serves as the foundation for the next. This is especially true in Part 2. We reiterate some fundamental concepts in several chapters. This is to help you integrate them into a new way of thinking about yourself and your relationship. Understand terms. We have created some new terms and definitions in order to make this book more intelligible. Non-borderline, non-BP. The term non-borderline, non-BP, does not mean person who doesn't have BPD. Rather, it is shorthand for relative, partner, friend, or other individual who is affected by the behavior of someone with BPD. Non-BPs can be in any type of relationship with someone who has BPD. Non-BPs we interviewed included aunts, cousins, and co-workers of people with BPD. Non-BPs are a diverse group of people who are affected by people with BPD in a variety of ways. Some non-BPs are very supportive of the people with BPD in their lives. Some may be verbally or physically abusive. Non-BPs may have mental health concerns of their own, such as depression, substance abuse, attention deficit disorder, and borderline personality disorder. Some people with BPD were sexually, physically, and emotionally abused by their parents or other caretakers. Others had very good parents who have dedicated their lives to getting treatment for their children. The parents we interviewed fall into the latter category. They were not perfect parents, who among us can claim perfection, but their behavior was not abusive. When we discuss parents, we mean ordinary parents who make ordinary mistakes. Borderline, BP. We use the term borderline, BP, to mean a person who has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder or who seems to fit the definition for BPD in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4TR, DSM 2004, published by the American Psychiatric Association. BPD is often misdiagnosed and frequently coexists with other mental health conditions. If your BP has been under the care of several mental health professionals, it's quite possible that there are differing opinions about the diagnosis. In the absence of a formal diagnosis, you may feel uncomfortable calling this person borderline. Don't let that stop you from getting vital information you need to make your life better. You should not diagnose people based on information in a book. A diagnosis can only be made by a professional who is experienced in assessing and treating people with BPD. You may never know for sure if the person you care about really has BPD. The person may refuse to be evaluated by a mental health professional. In fact, that person may deny that he or she is having difficulties. Or he or she may be seeing a therapist but choose not to share the diagnosis with you. Remember, this book is about you, not the BP. You have the right to seek help. And if you are being confronted with behavior patterns like those listed previously, you will be able to benefit from the strategies in this book, regardless of the presence or absence of a BPD diagnosis. Borderline versus person with BPD. Some professionals prefer the phrase person with BPD. They believe that calling someone a borderline implies that the diagnosis defines the person. These clinicians assert that the longer phrase, person with BPD, should always be used. While we agree that the term person with BPD is less stigmatizing than the noun borderline, our goal is to produce a book that is succinct as well as respectful to people with mental disorders, to examine the complex interactions between BPs and non-BPs. We must often differentiate between them, sometimes several times in the same sentence. Using the longer phrase would make this book too hard to listen to, so we have chosen to use borderline or BP instead. More importantly, BP is inclusive of people who have not been formally diagnosed but show the traits. Remember our focus. As you listen, it may seem as if we are holding the person with BPD responsible for all the problems in the relationship, but actually, we are not discussing the relationship as a whole at all. Our focus is very narrow, coping with BPD behavior. In real life, relationships are multifaceted. Hundreds of factors unrelated to BPD affect them. We do not address these factors because they are beyond the scope of this book. The BP is responsible for 50% of the relationship, and the non-BP is responsible for the other half. At the same time, each person is responsible for 100% of their own 50%. Know there is hope. BPD is probably the most misunderstood psychiatric diagnosis, and the biggest misperception is that people with BPD never get any better. In reality, medications can help reduce depression, moodiness, and impulsivity. Certain treatments have been shown to be effective in empirical research. We have met many recovered borderlines who no longer feel compelling urges to hurt themselves, who feel good about themselves, and who give and receive love joyfully. What if the BP refuses help and treatment? There's still hope. Although you can't change the person with BPD, you can change yourself. By examining your own behavior and modifying your actions, you can get off the emotional roller coaster and reclaim your life. Chapter 2. The Inner World of the Borderline. Defining BPD. Trying to define BPD is like staring into a lava lamp. What you see is constantly changing. The illness not only causes instability, but symbolizes it. Janice Caldwell's Imbroglio, Rising to the Challenges of Borderline Personality Disorder. Understanding Personality Disorders. According to the DSM-4-TR, 2004, a personality disorder is an enduring pattern of inner experience and behavior that deviates markedly from the expectation of the individual's culture, pervasive and inflexible, unlikely to change, stable over time, leads to distress or impairment in interpersonal relationships. The very definition of a personality disorder is that it causes distress for both the person who has the disorder and those who interact with him or her. Since the description of BPD seems so negative, people diagnosed with it often feel stigmatized. It's crucial to keep in mind that borderline personality disorder and the person who has it are not one and the same. When you're living with someone with BPD, however, it can be difficult to separate BPD from the person who suffers from it. Borderlines recover. Ultimately, the only person who can control the thoughts, feelings, and behaviors of the person with BPD is the borderline him or herself. Understanding this is vital for the BP's recovery, and your own. The criteria for BPD. The DSM-4-TR 2004 diagnostic criteria for borderline personality disorder reads as follows. A pervasive pattern of instability of interpersonal relationships, self-image and affects, moods, and marked impulsivity beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts, as indicated by five or more of the following. 1. Frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment. Note, do not include suicidal or self-mutilating behavior covered in 5. 2. A pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation. 3. Identity disturbance, markedly and persistently unstable self-image or sense of self. 4. Impulsivity in at least two areas that are potentially self-damaging. Example given, spending, sex, substance abuse, shoplifting, reckless driving, binge eating. Note, do not include suicidal or self-mutilating behavior covered in 5. 5. Recurrent suicidal behavior, gestures or threats, or self-mutilating behavior. 6. Affective instability due to a marked reactivity of mood. Example given, intense episodic dysphoria, irritability, or anxiety usually lasting a few hours and only rarely more than a few days. 7. Chronic feelings of emptiness. 8. Inappropriate intense anger or difficulty controlling anger. Example given, frequent displays of temper, constant anger, recurrent physical fights. 9. Transient stress-related paranoid ideation or severe dissociative symptoms. We'll explain more about the criteria as well as provide examples from people with BPD and their family members. In this text, we've grouped lack of identity and feelings of emptiness, 3 and 7, in the same section because we believe they are related. We've also separated suicide and self-mutilation, 5, because we believe that the motivations for each are very different. Dysphoria is the opposite of euphoria. It's a mixture of depression, anxiety, rage, and despair. 1. Frantic efforts to avoid real or imagined abandonment. Imagine the terror that you would feel if you were a child lost and alone in the middle of Times Square in New York City. Your mom was there a second ago, holding your hand. Suddenly the crowd swept her away. You look around, frantically, trying to find her. This is how people with BPD feel nearly all the time. Isolated, anxious, terrified at the thought of being alone. Caring, supportive people are like friendly faces in the middle of the crowd, but the moment they do something that the BP interprets as a signal they're about to leave, the BP panics and reacts. The person may burst into rage or beg the loved one to stay. It takes little to trigger fear of abandonment. One borderline woman refused to let her roommate leave their apartment to do laundry. The fear of abandonment can be so strong that it can overwhelm the BP. For example, when one man told his BP wife that he had a potentially fatal illness, she raged at him for seeing the doctor. If your BP was neglected as a child or raised in a severely dysfunctional household, he may have learned to cope by denying or suppressing his terror at being abandoned. After many years of practice, he no longer feels the original emotion. When your BP becomes upset or angry, it may help to think about whether anything has happened that might be triggering fears of abandonment. Armin, non-BP. If I'm 5 minutes late coming home from work, my wife will call to find out where I am. She pages me constantly. I can't go out by myself with friends anymore because she reacts so strongly. She'll even page me while I'm watching a movie. It's so stressful that I've stopped going out with friends unless she feels like coming along. Tess, BP. When I feel abandoned, I feel a combination of isolation, terror, and alienation. I panic. I feel betrayed and used. I think I'm going to die. One night, I called my boyfriend, and he said he would call me back because he was watching TV, so I did my ironing to pass the time. He didn't call. I waited. He didn't call. This terrible feeling of being abandoned came over me again. It hurt so bad because the day before I had started to believe that he really loved me. By the time the phone rang at 10 p.m., I had decided to break up with him, get rid of him before he could get rid of me. He had still been watching the movie. I felt so ridiculous, but the pain, the fear, and the poker in my gut were very real. Sometimes the person with BPD will tell you outright that they are afraid of being abandoned, but just as frequently, this fear will be expressed in other ways. Rage, for example. Feeling vulnerable and out of control can provoke anger. 2. A pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships characterized by alternating between extremes of idealization and devaluation, splitting. People with BPD look to others to provide things they find difficult to supply for themselves, such as self-esteem, approval, and a sense of identity. Most of all, they are searching for a nurturing caregiver whose never-ending love and compassion will fill the black hole of emptiness and despair inside them. Beverly, BP. I used to approach every friendly-looking person with a deep hope that they would take care of me. Then I began to realize that none of them were able to nurture me the way that I wanted, because although I felt like a child inside, I looked like an adult on the outside. The intense need of people with BPD can put a strain on any relationship, even when the non-BP is a parent and the BP is a child. Roberta, non-BP. Parenting my 18-year-old daughter with BPD has always been a 24-hour-a-day job. She is depressed and needs to be comforted. She needs help in thinking through solutions to everyday problems. She cries and bleeds from self-inflicted cuts. I love her very much, but I don't know what to do. All of my time and energy goes to her, and my other children resent it. For people with BPD, the potential loss of a relationship can be like facing the loss of an arm or leg, or even death. At the same time, their sense of self-esteem is so low that they really don't understand why anyone would want to be with them. People with BPD are hypervigilant, looking for any cues that might reveal that the person they care about doesn't really love them after all and is about to desert them. When their fears seem to be confirmed, they may erupt into a rage, make accusations, sob, seek revenge, mutilate themselves, have an affair, do other destructive things. This leads us to the central irony of borderline personality disorder. People who suffer from it desperately want closeness and intimacy, but the things they do to get it often drive people away. As torturous as this can be for you, imagine what it's like for the person who has the disorder. You can take a break and get away from it for a while. Go to a party, read a book, take a walk on the beach, but the BP lives with the fear and panic 24 hours a day. Understanding splitting. Many BPs fluctuate between extremes of idealization and devaluation. This is called splitting. People with BPD often perceive other people as either the wicked witch or fairy godmother, a saint or a demon. When you seem to be meeting their needs, they cast you in the role of superhero. But when they perceive that you've failed them, you become the villain. Because people with BPD have a hard time integrating a person's good and bad traits, their current opinion of someone is often based on their last interaction with them, like someone who lacks a short-term memory. Gerald J. Kreisman, author of I Hate You, Don't Leave Me, Understanding the Borderline Personality, and Sometimes I Act Crazy, explains splitting this way. Normal persons are ambivalent and can experience two contradictory states at one time. Borderlines characteristically shift back and forth, entirely unaware of one feeling state while in another. A child emotionally, the borderline cannot tolerate human inconsistencies and ambiguities. He cannot reconcile another's good and bad qualities into a constant, coherent understanding of another person. At any particular moment, one is either good or evil. There is no in-between, no gray area. Nuances and shadings are grasped with great difficulty, if at all. All-or-nothing thinking may appear in other areas of the BP's life, not just relationships. When there is a problem, some people with BPD may feel as if there is only one solution. Once action is taken, there's no turning back. For example, when one borderline woman was given new work duties she disliked, her solution was to quit her job. A BP's effort may be all or nothing. For example, a borderline college student became so involved with a political campaign that he flunked all his classes, but then dropped his political activities in favor of school the next semester. Difficulty defining relationships. People with BPD may feel that relationships must be clearly defined. Someone is either their friend or their enemy, their passionate lover or platonic buddy. This is one reason why people with BPD may have a hard time being platonic friends after a romance ends. This need for definition does not just apply to others. People with BPD also see themselves in black and white. In his self-help book for borderlines, Lost in the Mirror, An Inside Look at Borderline Personality Disorder, Richard Moskowitz writes, "You, the person with BPD, may strive valiantly for perfection and feel, at times, that you have achieved it, only to condemn yourself when the smallest flaw appears. When you are good, you may feel entitled to special treatment and live outside the rules made for others. You may feel entitled to take whatever you wish and have everything good for yourself." Dealing with splitting. It is impossible to fulfill all your borderline's needs and expectations. Once you take steps to meet the borderline's needs, he may decide he wants something else. Your role may change from hero to villain several times in one day, or it can take years for the person with BPD to cycle through the saint-sinner pattern. Sometimes the BP may find a new love object once the old one has proven to be flawed, only to repeat the cycle with someone else. People with BPD are fully convinced their skewed feelings and beliefs, be they positive or negative, are unquestionably true. Therefore, your mission is to maintain a consistent, balanced view of yourself, despite their ups, downs, and sideways. Partially because of their habit of splitting, people with BPD, especially those who were abused as children, find it extremely difficult to trust others. This lack of trust causes a great deal of turbulence in relationships. For example, while they are seeing you as a villain, they may accuse you of not loving them or of having an affair. Non-BPs in this situation often try harder to show their trustworthiness, but often to no effect. That's because the feelings of mistrust lie within the person with BPD and have nothing to do with the specific actions of the non-BP. Rachel Ryland, author of Get Me Out of Here, My Recovery from Borderline Personality Disorder, wrote in an email, "I always had this insatiable hunger for something I couldn't define, except to call it the bottomless pit of need. Something that made me scared to get close to anybody for fear they'd discover I was rotten and disturbed. So I diversified. I had lots of friends and didn't get too close to any of them. If I let my guard down and one friend found out how weird I was and they backed off, well, I had 59 others. But now a romantic relationship has kicked in. The stakes are high, with one person meaning so much. This is different. The guy needs me, too. So maybe it's safe here. Be with me, please. Every day and every night. Look at me. Listen to me. I'm here. See me? I'm here. I'm here. Oh, this is incredible. Finally, the one person who can take all of this need. What a relief. Hey, wait a minute. He's resisting this. Says he wants to watch TV in peace. Says he's got something else to do. What the hell do I do now? Ooh, am I frustrated. Damn it, I hate this guy. I let my guard down. Doesn't he know how hard it was for me to do that? How dare he rather watch TV than talk to me? How dare he rather be out with his friends than be right here? How dare he find out what kind of a completely disturbed person I am? I'm furious, and I'm embarrassed as hell. I've been caught with my pants down. He's seen the bottomless pit of need. Embarrassed, I lash out. Let him have it. Hey, guess what, buddy? I don't care about you. Take this. Take that. I rage. I scream until I collapse in exhaustion. And then I wake up and I see how much I've hurt him. And I despise myself more than I could ever imagine. I'm scared to death because I just know he's gonna walk. I'm so vulnerable. I'm not tough. Please don't leave. I do need you. How can I show you? I cry. I beg. I tell him what an incredible man he is. How patient he is. I just know you hate me. You should hate me. I'd be better off dead. You'd be better off without me. No, I mean it. I wish I were dead. He's relenting a bit. Oh, please let me make it up to you. Let's make incredible love anywhere, anytime. Let me show you the best side of my passion. Phew, he's back. He's still around. Thank God I didn't blow it permanently. It feels so good to be with him. He cares. I need him. When I realize that I've caused irrevocable damage, when the cycle has repeated itself so often I'm convinced that I've irrevocably blown it, whether or not he has reached this conclusion, I cut the cord and find somebody else, and go through the whole damned thing again. 3. Identity disturbance, markedly and persistently unstable self-image or sense of self, and 7. Chronic feelings of emptiness. By the time people reach their 20s and 30s, their self-image is usually